So now I'm going to move on to our panel. I am going to click over to Mentimeter. So while our panel is speaking, I'm going to leave this Mentimeter open in the background for collecting questions that you may think of while we're talking. I'm not going to have it up on the screen, but it will be open in your smartphone or in your browser tab to add questions as you think of them in there. So now to hand over to my panel. And if you could switch your webcams on, please, so that our audience can see you. So we have Lorna Mitchell, who's Head of Library Archives and Publications at Royal Botanic Garden, Edinburgh. We have Rebecca Bailey, who's the Director of the Towards the National Collection Programme, the programme under which this project is funded. And Rebecca's based at Historic Environment Scotland. And we also have Claudia Fabian, Head of Manuscripts and Rare Books at Bavarian State Library. So Claudia is joining us today because of her work with an international group on ISMI, so International Standard Manuscript Identifiers. So each of our panelists are going to spend a few minutes giving their initial reactions to the survey initial results. And Lorna, shall we start with you, please?
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, good. A few things kind of struck me. I think the first thing, I mean, obviously there are issues in terms of organisational responses. We're very aware that so many of our colleagues are still on furlough at the moment, but it's interesting that to date the majority of those institutional responses are from the independent research organisations, and there's an element of, to some extent, we'd be more disappointed if they weren't aware of PIDs, so I'm wondering whether that's linked to that level of awareness. I guess the bit that what interests me is that the relatively low response rate so far is from local and regional museums. And I'm wondering if that in itself is an indication of a lack of awareness of PIDs and their relevance to these organisations. And thinking about this, I noticed on our project website, we talk about the fact that persistent identifiers provide a long-lasting clickable link to a digital object. But what happens if you don't have digital objects in your collection? In other words, if you've not got an active digitization program, does that mean that there's a perception that PIDs aren't actually relevant to you and your organization? So from our point of view, RBG, we've got three collections, obviously the living collection of plants growing out in our garden. We've got the herbarium of dried plant specimens and the library and archives, where I'm based. And today our digitization focus has been on the herbarium. And so I think what you would see is that the staff in that area are very aware of PIDs. Indeed, they've been instrumental in working with colleagues in other natural history collections to develop a system of PIDs that are now being used to uniquely identify the 500,000 specimens that we've digitized to date. And you just saw some of those identifiers in Rod's demo. We've just got another 2.5 million specimens to go, so we're getting there. There isn't yet an active systematic digitization program in the library and archives, and I think it would be fair to say that our knowledge as a result is quite different. We obviously use them, so DOIs, yep, we use them in our day-to-day work, but as I'm probably demonstrating quite ably through my involvement with this project, when it comes to knowing about some of the other PIDs that are out there, about the technical aspects of the use of PIDs, and you know how we make sure that those are persistent and all of these other issues, I think we'd be struggling. It's a complicated landscape, and for many people I think they're just busy with the day-to-day stuff. So I guess for the project it makes me wonder whether we also need to look at the benefits around the use of PIDs in terms of managing existing physical collections. Can we use the case studies to identify other unexpected benefits of PIDs in terms of general collections management? So can we make them more relevant to that day-to-day stuff? So that was my first thought. As I said, I'm not a technical person, so yeah, stuff, I'm very non-technical. I guess the other aspect of this is RBGE, as a co-investigator in this project, is also quite an interesting case study, I think, as it sits on that junction between scientific research and heritage collections. Our primary funding is for our scientific work, But we hold collections that date from the 15th century and that have immense cultural heritage value. So we've got original artworks, early examples of photography, an archive full of historical documents, and so on. To date, the drive for the digitisation of our herbarium has been about making the information that's held in our specimens available primarily to taxonomic and botanical researchers around the world. But what we're actually finding is that having digitised this stuff, lots of people are using it that we weren't really expecting. Now it's difficult because we don't necessarily have data to tell us what they're using the collection for it, for how they came across it, or whether they're finding what they're looking for. We just know that we've identified a potentially huge new audience for our collection. Lots of who knew a botanic garden had those type of moments. And so with more than 3 million specimens to try and digitise, RVGE has made a very pragmatic decision that we digitise content with minimal metadata. So we're not spending a huge amount of time databasing specimens that are being digitised. And we've also made the images freely, the high resolution versions of those images freely available. And it looks from the usage statistics that we're seeing that this approach is working. We're seeing the collection being opened up to these new audiences. And I guess it makes me wonder again, is there scope here to speed up digitization of the national collection if we take a minimal metadata plus PID approach? So in other words, we just get stuff up there, we tie an identifier to it, and stop worrying maybe about trying to make it accessible to particular users, because we don't necessarily know who those users are. And I wonder whether that sort of approach might also help to increase the uptake of PIDs in terms of it being a way of speeding up that digitization process and the cataloging process that so many of us are actually struggling with, in terms of using identifiers, making objects accessible by those identifiers, and then almost responding to that demand. So we try and create the demand and then respond to it. And it might be if we can tie identifiers to physical objects, it can then also help us guide those digitization programs by identifying the stuff that we need to do first. So that was me. That was a couple of thoughts that struck me.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Lorna. So I will hand over now to Rebecca Bailey. Rebecca, for some reason, we can't hear you. It doesn't say you're muted.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, it told me it was your fault and it told you it was my fault. So there you go. Thank you. This has been really, really interesting to hear more detail about what one of the foundation projects is up to. I think there are two key and linked areas that are of interest to me. And one is who we have to influence within organisations to increase the uptake, and what the Towards a National Collection programme can do to help that. So I was really interested in the demographics of who'd responded to the survey, and particularly the high percentage from the IT sector rather than sort of collections, and not the IT sector, IT within our organisations rather than collections management. But it was good to see a good spread from libraries, archives and museums, and that this wasn't being sort of strongly tilted by one sector. And I can see that both the awareness and use of PIDs is very patchy. And that obviously is an opportunity. There's great potential for growth, great potential for encouraging use. I also thought you got really good feedback on what kind of support people want. So that's fantastic that what you're already proposing is what people want to see, particularly around the recommendations for the sector and specific recommendations on how to select PIDs. This is not an area of expertise of mine, and I must admit I was quite horrified by the number of different PID systems there are, because that's probably not very helpful to have such a proliferation of different systems that people don't know, and also a proliferation of systems that need to be sustainable in some way. So my sort of first question really was, who do organizations need to influence, or who does the project need to influence in organizations? Who writes the specifications for collections databases? Who drives the change? So is it the IT departments that are the ones who want to influence, or is it the people in collections and archives who are writing the specifications that the IT departments then help to deliver? And really, that's a question for the group listening to this. But I think it's important to know who you need to influence in order to achieve change. Like Rachel, I particularly liked the quote, "I'm actually now questioning if I do know what a PID is," because I certainly thought an ISBN would be a PID, but not in project terms. And I thought that was extremely interesting. And it also raised for me, as someone who used to run a publishing department, why aren't ISBNs actionable? That seems such an incredibly obvious thing for the publishing industry to do, and for people who want to sell books to do. So again, who needs to be influenced to make things more useful? In terms of the Towards a National Collection programme, just in case there are people on the call who don't really know what we're up to. So this is a programme of funding from UKRI through the Arts and Humanities Research Council. And we're looking to fund projects that explore ways of connecting collections. And the reason we want to do that is to open up collections to research, to increase the amount of arts and humanities research that can take place, and also to get collections in a place where they can better support innovative public engagement. So that's kind of what we're after. And so our foundation projects are looking at literally the foundational elements of how you might achieve that. And the PID project is an excellent example of that. And we currently have a call out for discovery projects, which are around 3 million over 3 years. So that's £3 million. And those, of course, give the opportunity for people to actually enact some of these recommendations from across the foundation projects and from existing and current research elsewhere. And I would have to say, in the inquiries I'm getting at the moment, the pre-application inquiries for discovery projects, PIDs are coming up a great deal. So for me, success would be that the recommendations of this project are embedded in multiple bids, and that in the end, we end up funding projects that include the actual testing and full delivery of this kind of approach. But what's interesting to me is that the teams that are putting together proposals are obviously looking at multiple approaches. So PIDs are not the be all and end all that's going to solve everything for us, but they're an absolutely critical element. So I really hope that through Towards a National Collection, we have the opportunity to really demonstrate the potential of what's possible and to embed much greater knowledge across organizations of those benefits. And that brings it back to who we need to influence in terms of who specifies future developments, who agrees the funding for them, and how we take that forward. Final thought is about sustainability, because, you know, what's the point of doing this if it dies? So there really needs to be a long-term approach taken to this. And it seems to me, from an entirely naive perspective, that those publicly funded organizations who look after collections in perpetuity have a real role to play here in taking an in perpetuity approach to PIDs. So it's great to hear that one of the categories Rachel showed is already what the British Library are doing. And it seems to me there's absolutely a place for national collections to be taking some responsibility here. I also think there are opportunities in future funding, particularly through UKRI infrastructure investment, to demonstrate that PIDs are an essential component of providing a successful infrastructure in the future. So again, the learnings from all our foundation projects are feeding into these future funding asks. And the potential at the moment is that funding can actually be rather considerable, and we have the opportunity to make big change. So it's really important to me to hear how the community is receiving this project, and how you think we need to influence our organisations in the future to get take up of this. That's me.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Rebecca. Lots of things for us to think about there as a project as well as a community, I think. So finally, a response from Claudia. We really wanted to have someone who had an external view on the work we're doing around persistent identifiers, but someone who is actively looking at how we work with persistent identifiers across heritage organisations for a specific collection type, if you like. But Claudia, your turn for a response.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, and I'm very happy to know that the PIDS find this kind of attention and advocacy also within the UK heritage sector. I think it is an extremely important topic. For me, the survey shows a really good development to know that there is a good deal of awareness about PIDS, that there is some implementation and use, and well, the annotation tool that Roderick presented to us was just fascinating for me. But we also see within the survey that much more needs to be done about it. Probably less in the technical area. Well, technical, I mean, how to define a DOI or how to define a URN, but in making the PIDS known and used, and in the end, so useful that they really become permanent, persistent, and sustainable. And in this, I, as a normal librarian, have one major problem, not only with this survey, but with the concept of PID in general. What is really the important thing about a PID? My impression is that when we use this word, we mean or we imply quite different things depending on our background. I think it is a broad concept which needs to be broken into several parts in order to be demutified, and break it into several parts, which would also mean to identify what are PIDs in which sector. I fully agree with one of the speakers. The idea that an ISBN is not a PID is just strange to me. I think PIDs are important aspects when we transfer the analog world into a digital content and make them interactive and clickable. That's a technical process which can be done, as is this interlinking, which was shown in the annotation concept. So I think when an IT person considers PIDs, they look at other aspects than when a cataloger or a researcher is concerned about PIDs. I myself was invited to this panel because I'm part of a group eager to introduce a new PID, an international standard number for manuscripts, in short, an ISMI. Again, this is not a technical issue. This identifier can be expressed via ARC, DOI, or URN, or even more of these systems. The thing is that we do have a real world object, a manuscript, a codex manuscript, a unique object in the real world. It is a cultural heritage entity. It is something which is dealt with since centuries of a tradition, but we have no way to name it in a standardized way, which would be accessible to everybody. So this object in the real world has not only one name, but there are very many different ways of naming it and of describing it. It even has a presence in the internet, in the World Wide Web, once the original has been digitized, but be careful. It's not the original which sits in the digital world, but it is a representative of the original. A lot of information about this object is found in different analog and in digital resources. Everybody names this object differently. Libraries care for a kind of standardization of this information, but they are only a small part of a much larger research and heritage infrastructure. So we thought in this group, how beautiful would it be that everybody having to say something about a manuscript, digitizing the original or a microfilm of the original, trading a book, talking about its past in different collections, editing texts within a manuscript, would use the same name for this one object. And ISMI should be this, a name without a semantic burden, a mere 6 to 7 digits number with a control key probably, a number unique, interoperable, machine readable, and therefore constructed as DOE, etc. But to make this number, well, to implement it, to make it findable and understandable and usable, it must be connected to some kind of information about the object. But we think that it should be as little as possible. That is when Lorna was talking about little key data, very few information, just to give it a presence in the digital world. The full richness of information can be distributed in a number of machine readable documents, which, if they all quote the ISMI, or if the ISMI is linked to them to such a clever system as this annotated tool, it could be easily accessible and networked only by this number. For me as a librarian, a lot of points and issues are essential about a permanent identifier. A pitch should be unique. There should not be 2 or 3 for the same object, unless they are firmly related among each other as identical. They must be somehow explained and resolved in an understandable way. For an ISMI, that means we must know the place, the institution, the shelf mark of a manuscript, or some other kind of identification. And when I say place and institution, we immediately understand that also the world of PIDs is interlinked, because there are already PIDs for places, there are PIDs for institutions, the famous institution international standard identifier for libraries, EASL. Not everybody knows it, not everybody uses it, but in this kind of environment, interconnecting different PIDs, I think that is the way forward, and not starting standardizing from scratch. When we started this project, we did encounter a lot of concern. Mostly the concern was that the ISMI would be a new way to catalog manuscripts, a kind of hypercatalog. No, it is not. It is an identifier. And I think that is something which is different to bring through to librarians, that it is not a catalog, that it is not a new metadata scheme, that it is a point of information. But still, all these catalogs, all these ways of describing manuscripts may play a role for getting PIDs for manuscripts, but they are a helpful tool, and it is not a new tool. The other thing is that, well, in order to get PIDs, it is important to implement them, to have a PID, to know which one to take, and there must be a permanent care and maintenance in order to keep them useful for the future. And I think that is also something for this project to look into the world of pits already identified, which do exist throughout the internet, throughout the heritage sector, to align them and to define them and to make sure that they are uptaken and used by all kinds of projects. So the permanent identifier must be known, it must be clearly defined in its relationship to an entity, and in the surveys, it could be asked, which one do we know, how do we use them, and also which kind of identifiers do we miss and would like to have. And if we come to this kind of picture, we can also find out what is already defined in all kind of areas. And last but not least, and that for a librarian is painful and difficult, the identifier must be as independent as possible from any cataloging or designation policy. It is not about the best or the most correct way of naming, for instance, a person or an institution, an object or a place. It is about making even different name conventions interoperable and interactive. The important thing here is the definition of the entity, which must be given somewhere in an understandable and consistent way. A lot of reluctance towards identifiers, in my experience, is not about the identifier, but about the way to best name the entity. So that were my comments.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Claudia. So we have had 15 comments and questions. 19 has jumped up as I've looked at it. First of all, are there any responses that the panel would like to make to each other while I share the appropriate screen? Okay. All right. So we are not going to have time to go through all of these because I think we only really have about 10 minutes left on the call before we have to wrap things up. So I've had a quick scan through some of the initial questions. Any questions we don't get to answer, we will try and put out responses from the project or from the panel to these questions offline in the follow up to this event. So sorry that we won't get to all of them. But I saw the second question that we had come in was around how do we draw the distinction between a PID that refers to the physical object and a PID that refers to the museum's documentation about the object, i.e. the object records, which I think is quite an interesting question that points to what you were just saying, Claudia, about defining what it is the persistent identifier is for.
Yeah, and that is an issue in which we ran immediately when defining ISMI, that people don't make this distinction and it needs to be made. Well, just consider it like a barcode sitting on a physical book. Yeah, that's what ISMI should be, whereas documentation about the object can be in a relationship towards this object. The object record tells us something about the object, but it is not the object itself. This kind of distinction.
Yeah. Lorna, do you have a response to that?
Yeah, I would agree with what Claudia says. I mean, I think to some extent the object record in terms of, As a librarian, we have a catalogue and we're really concerned to make our catalogue records as accurate as possible. And they themselves actually can become quite important cultural records because they tell you something about what people were looking at when they catalogued those items. So I think it's creating that relationship between all of these different identifiers. And I think a real challenge for that is around that consistency. In terms of ensuring that we're all doing these things in the same way, so that we can actually make those connections.
Perfect, thank you. So we had a question about linking and knowledge cross. I'm going to skip over that one because I think we can do a nice project response to that after the event. Also with versioning, links to Disco. This question was interesting for Rebecca about the timing of this. I think I will give a slight project response in that, yes, the projects, foundation projects go beyond the deadline for the discovery projects, but we intend to provide an interim report that will feed into towards the national collection and that process before the deadline in November. But Rebecca, did you have something specific to say on that?
Just really that the projects are live, so talk to them. You know, this isn't about waiting for a project to finish and deliver its report. This is live research. So we're seeing that a great deal, that people developing discovery project applications are getting involved in the foundation projects and talking to them. And that's the situation we're in. And at the moment, it's feeling to me an incredibly positive relationship.
Lovely. Thank you very much. So let's take the time to look at one more. Apologies if we skip over yours and say we will answer it later. If any of the panel see something they would like to comment on. I think this is quite interesting. What kits can anyone suggest be used with art and design research outputs, e.g. exhibitions or artifacts? And I think for me, this is an interesting question because we have things like exhibitions where you will have a record of an event that took place, but that event was time limited and does not exist anymore. So again, it plays into how you define what the persistent identifier was and what it is actually attached to. If your persistent identifier is persistent, but your item is not persistent.
But again, that would be really interesting to be able to create that trail of, if you can link back to the collection objects that were used in different exhibitions, having that history recorded and being able to and shareable and again, you know, available in terms of demonstrating impact of collections and so on, that would be an incredibly useful thing to be able to do. And I think that ties back to one of the things I was thinking about watching Rod's demo, is that obviously the focus there was around scholarly articles, but actually collection objects are used in so many different ways. And I think what we need to do is look at how we can support, I guess, the recording of that in terms of, and I think exhibitions is a really good example of that, where lots of our collections will be used in exhibitions, and obviously not just internally, but externally as well. And how do we pull all of that together and enable those connections to be made?
Thank you, Claudia.
Within our authority files, name authority file of Library of Congress or the German national authority file, we name exhibitions and they get an authority number. We wouldn't say that this is a PID, but why is it not a PID? And from this, again, another universe opens where we could then, if we have names for the artifacts, relate to them. I think a lot of this kind of information is hidden or, well, is present already in our different authority files and could be made interoperable. That's even the case for the ISMI, for the international, for the manuscript number. We do have authority numbers for manuscripts, but not enough in order to make a national collection out of it. And the same will probably be true for exhibitions, where we only have records for those where we have an exhibition catalog or where somebody wrote a book about an exhibition.
Perfect. Thank you very much. So apologies for my horrific chairing that's made us run very much over time and still not have time to address everyone's questions. But as I said, we will try and answer as many of these as possible offline. Thank you to our three panelists. Thank you also to Rod for presenting. Thanks to all the attendees that we've had online. We will make the recording available after the fact. There is already actually a demo that Rod recorded, so we'll share the link to that on YouTube as well. But yes, have a nice rest of your day. Thank you very much.